Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show, and we also, this is kind of like our first episode of 2020.
It's true.
Yeah, we have one of our really good friends, Miss Kate Gimbalo. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
Happy, what is this, January 27th or something?
It's Super Bowl week, right?
There is a Super Bowl this week.
That's where I am, like, in the Super Bowl week.
Are you a sports fan all the time, Kate?
I am this week.
Yeah.
I am the quintessential football widow.
Mm.
But, yeah, the build-up to this week, I have had to watch and... My family now understands why I don't watch football, because I can't temper myself. Mm. I'm a crazy woman when I do. And
Yes. I don't do the sports balls at all. But when I do, because I was raised in a sports family, I like scream and my kids are like, what are you doing?
Yes.
I'm like, well.
Yes.
My mom's famous is, get him! Get him! She was screaming that on a plane like a week ago. Get him! And my husband Matt had not really ever watched a football game with her. And so he was like, what the hell are you doing, crazy?
Well, at some point I went, oh! And I saw Dermot said, now you're singing opera?
Yes.
And I said, dude, if it works, I will shuffle off to Buffalo if they score. And they scored, and he was like, all right. And I was like, there I was in my pajamas, shuffling off to Buffalo.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Like, the city has such a charge right now.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And it's, I talk about it a lot that, obviously, I'm a theater fanatic, but I think that live sports is one of the coolest forms of live theater ever. You have an audience, and the game is never the same, and we're having this relationship with each other. You can't really hoot and holler the same way in a theater show, but
it depends on the show.
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends on the show, right? Rocky Horror probably gets closer
to that. That's true, that's true.
So, Miss Kate, I don't know why I'm calling you Miss Kate.
It's like
Miss Manners or something. Miss Kate. How the hell did you get to the couch today?
I got to the couch today by meeting you.
That's me.
God. Man, 9 years?
Yeah.
Something like that?
I would say that, yeah.
Yeah, where you and I met. You were backstage at a big event that I was doing, and I was like, gravitated to the energy, and I haven't let go of you since.
I know.
So that's how. We've intersected in and out of each other's lives professionally, and now, thank God, personally. And
We had a pretty good run this summer. We had made a vow to each other to try and see each other every month at least.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
During those warm months when you just want to like sit out on a deck and drink wine and all that. Courtney actually, because we were Silpata, like she was working for Silpata at that point, and Alex, her husband, was the one who was building... Mm-hmm. The sets for that show, and so that is how I got my way backstage time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy. And then you and I had some adventures around the world.
We may have gone to Paris together. We may have had dinner with my Florence Henderson in L.A.
We did.
Mm-hmm. We had some adventures.
That's a highlight, you know, for sure, of my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was the last time I got to see her.
Mm-hmm. I know. I can't believe that whole, like, special evening was shared. And it was so natural. I mean, you had talked about it, but I just remember on the plane, you were like, I'm going to have dinner with my friend Flo tonight, and I'm not even acknowledging what the hell you're talking about. And then all of a sudden that night, you're like, well, we're going to go to dinner. Is that all right? And on the way, we're in a cab with our other person, Jamie.
Who is a goddess.
And all of a sudden, I was like, Florence Henderson. I don't know if I was fully, like, prepared, because we had just got off a plane and, like, went to dinner that night.
That was our only night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was
only chance. So,
that was Los Angeles, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Good times. We've had good times. And we continue to have good times.
We do. We also had quite the adventure this summer with the Olathe City Council.
We had a big adventure there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that also, if I wasn't seeing Kate on a Saturday, I was seeing Kate like every other Tuesday.
Tuesday night.
Yeah. And I... you know, you're definitely a guru in lessons, and that was something that I had no idea what I was getting myself into the first meeting I went to, and then I became pretty obsessed with how that was actually taking place in a city that I have sort of grown up in different ways between going to theater and having friends there, and I was just completely shocked that that city felt that way. Now they've obviously voted in a good direction, but
yeah. But I think when people go the first time, you can hear that there is opposition to it, but you don't understand what that looks like until you sit in a room with quote good people, mm-hmm. who then stand up 6 feet away from you and call you a pedophile, call you a deviant, say that you have an agenda to sway children to mm-hmm. being gay.
And don't forget the active dildos, people.
Oh, active dildo cakes. I mean, it's really mind-boggling. And
it was.
So many friends like you, and a lot of my straight friends who came, all it took was one meeting to sit there and realize that people actually not only think it, they verbalize it, right. And then they actively work against you having equal rights. It just is mind-boggling.
My least favorite, but favorite night was the I love you, but night. You know, the time that all of these people stood up there and said, I love you, but you are not worthy. Right. I love you, but, and I just, that night enraged, you know, something inside of me, because I was like, don't use those words of I love you and I respect you, but, like, it shouldn't come with a contingent on naturally caring about us.
Well, and it's remarkable.
It was so crazy.
To try and figure out where that comes from. Like, because I don't understand, like, it, again, like, this is very, I had a similar situation happen with my daughter, is in charge of the Drag Queen Storytime here. And that lovely, lovely woman, Elizabeth Johnston, mommy activist from the Fox News, got a hold of the event page 2 weeks ago and shared it with her million followers. And so then I had the, you know, we're going to come take your child away and all of this kind of stuff. And I was just like, I need to know where this sexual deviant thing, like where the pet, like where does that come from? What is it that you see in your head that makes you think, like, if you don't want to come, because ours is different than the current bill that's going to go to the Missouri House, we're in a private venue. We're at Hamburger Mary's. We are not in a library. There is no public funding that comes, you know, mm-hmm. just don't come. Like, why do you feel the need to threaten people and tell them how terrible they are? And what I'm like, I don't understand where that comes from or why that started, or
well, but imagine, and this is, I'm a huge believer in religion. Mm-hmm. I believe that there are so many paths that lead to God. I celebrate and exalt all paths of goodness mm-hmm. to God, because I think God is too vast to be contained in one belief system.
Sure.
But I also understand that there are belief systems out there that are so mired in fear and judgment that the only way you can secure your place next to your Heavenly Father is if you do nothing but hold everyone else to some, I don't know, some standard of normalcy. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only thing that you find comfort in. So anything that is not like that, like you, mm-hmm. then is wrong and has to be made to feel wrong so that you can continue to be okay, right? Because, like, this is the only right. The way I am is the only right. And that's where the I love you buts come in. Like, it's not my job to judge you. I would never judge you. I love you. Mm-hmm.
But you are a deviant.
And you are, you know, askew, and you are not going to heaven.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it is this mind-boggling, if you are someone who is open mm-hmm. to others' religions and philosophies and all of that, it is this mind-boggling thing of how in the...
Yes.
How in the world, how in the fucking world can you look at the billions of people in this world and think that only your little sect is the right sect? It's unbelievable to me.
Right. Like, and I couldn't tell you how many people I had to be like, The things are not mutually exclusive. You can still believe that I am going to burn in hell and mind your own business. Like, those two things can't exist on the
Almost.
Same plane.
Who asked you? Like, I mean, in some way, like...
I'm not telling you you can't hate me. That's fine. But you can't threaten to take my child away from me. Like, that can't be a thing that you're going to be like, I'm going to show up. And I mean, we had somebody be like, I'm showing up and we're going to drag people behind a truck. Anyone, any parent that... And I'm just like, I'll teach you about drag. And I'm just like, what? Why does it matter to you? It's insane.
Well, but see, there are certain religions where your job specifically is to bring other people to your side, to the right side. I can't tell you through the NDO process how many people just wanted to meet with me so they could, I could hear their testimony. I'm like, I have heard your testimony. Yes. You have stood at that meeting.
And you're on public record.
Yeah, I've heard your testimony. I don't need to hear how you found your God. I have my God. I have a very strong relationship with God. My God is all loving.
Have you always had a strong relationship with God in your life? Or has it like gone in and out and you found a new place in different parts of your life? You know, have you always sort of been on the same track?
I didn't grow up going to any kind of church. I grew up in Germany, in Europe, and not that that's... They had churches, actually. Really old ones.
Yes. You know those Germans.
They know how to do religion.
Yeah.
But no, it just wasn't a part of our lives. But my mom always had... You know, so I was born in the 60s, 66. So in the 70s, when I was growing up and have memories, mom always had an area of the house where she had a single mattress on the ground... that was wrapped in this crazy 1970s fabric. And it was always tucked in the corner, and it was her cognac corner. And she would sit there and she'd listen to, you know, Billy Joel records, and she'd have a little cognac. But she was also meditating.
Right.
Right? And so I knew that, I knew growing up that my mom was meditating, and she read Cahill Gibran and, you know, things like that. So I had exposure to it. I would read those things, but I didn't know how to articulate that into a faith-based system. And so as I went into college, I have friends of every ilk. So I had gone to, you know, Catholic services, and I went to, my best friend was a Mormon, and I'd gone to many Mormon services and kind of saw the through line, but none of them spoke to me.
Right.
And then met my wife. She was Catholic, one of 10. Kids in the family, and her mom was the most devout Catholic I'd ever known. She did Mass 7 days a week. And yet, instead of being a but person, and she loved everyone. And she loved everyone unconditionally. As a matter of fact,
that should have been the end of that post I made. I love you, and.
And.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so that was a really interesting thing, because she was the first person of that deep of faith. I mean, when she passed, the... I forgot what they're called, like the bishop or whatever of the area. The big guy in the area came and did her service. I mean, she was just all that in a bag of chips. So I remember being inspired by that, but that's still not resonating. And then my wife and I had been together 11 years, and I was in a really bad place, and the relationship was basically over, and I felt like my life was over, and... Mm-hmm. Through that, that's when I met Florence Henderson. Florence gave me a book that changed my life called Radical Forgiveness. I started doing that thing and started dealing with some stuff, and a friend invited me to go to a church that is called the Center for Spiritual Living, which is all encompassing. You know, we believe that everything I said earlier, you know, God is vast and God is all there is, and God is love and acceptance and brilliance, and we're all tapped into that, and we all share one universal power. And yeah, that just did it. That,
and then you sort of grew in that church as well, right? You are almost a voice now of that organization.
Yes.
If I, you know, yeah.
No, I'm on for the church here. I'm on basically the board of directors. Mm-hmm. So help try to make really great decisions for us and help us grow and, stand up in the community. We do really great outreach stuff. As a matter of fact, we have something really exciting coming up with some of our Muslim friends.
Cool.
I'm very excited about
that.
Tell us
about that if you want to.
I can't tell you a lot about it, but we did. There's an organization here called the Crescent Peace Society that I fell in love with about 2 years ago, and shortly after the election, actually, so 2.5 years ago. And they have been around since the Oklahoma City bombing, when their kids were being treated very badly in schools, because originally they had thought that bombing was Muslim.
Sure.
And through that, they decided that they had not, you know, they have, as
you
a...
You mean terrorists can be someone besides Muslim?
It's shocking.
It's crazy.
Yeah, they don't have brown skin necessarily.
Wow.
I know, much to the disbelief of some.
Uh-huh.
So they just do
blown.
This. Yeah. They do this amazing thing called Meet a Muslim, because they decided as a society, as a community, that they had done a disservice to everyone by just putting their heads down, working hard, you know, doing the American dream. And instead, they hadn't put themselves out there enough. And so they started sponsoring these Meet a Muslim events and would just, and I got to go to one. I took our son to one when he was 11, 10 and a half or 11. And we got to sponsor one of those at our church. Mm-hmm. And basically, they come wherever you want them to come. These amazing human beings show up, and you sit at round tables, and it's like speed dating. Mm-hmm. And so they just move from table to table, so you get to talk to amazing humans. You can ask them anything, right, anything about being Muslim. And so that's made this really great connection. The man who runs that, I just respect so much. And yeah, it's a great organization. You should look it up.
Awesome. I would love that. And yeah. I love any of those, you know, Courtney and I talk about a long time, and especially as she started to have kids and, you know, and having these conversations of religion is, it comes into, you know, schools in different ways and lives in different ways, and how do you sort of approach those conversations? And Courtney has always said that she has wanted to learn about all of them. And that's mm-hmm. the same way, you know, that I feel. And so that was kind of one of our connections through religion, if you will, is to say I'm invested in all of them, because right. there's got to be a through line.
Right. And there is.
Yes.
And it's love and acceptance. Right. That's what's so insane about it all. Uh-huh. That any religion that sees themselves as segmented away and doesn't see every other person as their brother or sister is amazing to me. So December at CSL, Center for Spiritual Living, in December we looked at lots of different religions. We do that once a month anyway. We light candles to all of the faiths mm-hmm. in the world. But in this case, we had a Buddhist monk come. We had a Muslim come. I mean, they came and stood up there on the pulpit, and they were able to share exactly that.
Yes.
The through line of, right. we're not so different, no. you and I and you and all of us.
Right.
I love that. I love
it. And I think that we, for some reason, forget that. You know, there's a time where we all stand around in music class in second grade and hold hands and sing, like, the children are the future, you know, and then it's almost like you walk out of that room and forget that for one moment we all were sitting there hitting our wood blocks together in music right. class, like, as one sort of rhythmic group, and then we exit those rooms sometimes and just forget that we're not all connected in the great circle of life, if sure. you will.
Yeah, you unfortunately know. That's because life happens to us, people happen
it
to
does.
Us.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin to forget because people continue to tell us what's so different about each of us.
Right.
Instead of what is alike.
Well, and that we live in a society that feeds on the fear of, you know, that, yeah. I mean, I think that after all of that ordeal, I made some sort of post that was just like, of all of the choices that we have in the world, there are so many of them. Why the hell are you choosing fear? Like, it's just not one, yeah. you know, but it's, you know, centuries old. I mean, that's what is the easiest way to have power or create power, or, you know, it's yeah. it's all just so silly. But if you have to accept that everyone might be wrong, you kind of have to go on the side where everyone might also be right. And so that,
well,
you
I'm
know,
a crazy devil's like, advocate. Both right. sides have their merit in conversation, you mm-hmm. know.
Yep.
So it's crazy. I mean, the NDO, you know, one of the most annoying things was when they were talking about bathrooms, and I was like, well, we're not. That's not even what NDO, what we're
it's
talking
nothing
about.
Nothing to do with
so it. Please read. And that honestly was something that Matt, you know, my husband and I on the way home would talk about, is I don't think these people have even read what they're contesting
they
up there. And so you just want to be like, I get it. If you want to talk about bathrooms, like, that is a sub-conversation that we can have. But right now, I could be asked to leave KFC because I'm holding my husband's
right.
hand.
Right.
Like, it has nothing to do with where I'm using the facilities. It
okay.
has to do with, you guys might be a little too gay. Or, as Matt talked about, so if I were to have a problem in my work and I were to go and talk to my boss about that maybe someone was hating me for my sexuality, I could get fired, not for any other reason, but I'm now a liability to the company of, ooh, that could bring us some drama, so let's just go ahead and get rid of you. And people were like, but that would never happen. And I was like, you are blind.
Yes.
Come to this meeting and sit when there is a docket list of 30 people who want to tell us that life sucks
yeah.
sometimes.
And even people who, so it was about 2 weeks after it had passed, I went to an Olathe City meeting for a council, a committee meeting. And I was just a guest, so I wasn't to speak. And near the end, they were getting an update from an official with the city, very nice human being, mm-hmm. very nice man, serves our city well. And he said, so you may have heard that the city passed an NDO, doesn't really have anything to do with you guys, but I just wanted to give you a heads up about it. And someone on that committee or that council said, well, what is that anyway? What's the NDO? And he said, well, you know how like stores used to be able to, or they put a sign up that says like no shirt, no shoes, no service? Well, it's kind of like that, but with gay people, you know, you don't get to say that. If they come in your store and they want you to do something for them, you have to do it. That's basically what it is. And I just sort of sat for a second expecting one of the other 10 people on that council, several of whom had been there for the vote, to say something, and they didn't, and I raised my hand. And
I'm not fully okay with your verbiage.
This official looked over at me, and he said, yeah. And I said, would you mind very much if I just say something? And he said, well, no, that's fine. And I said, okay, so actually that's not what the NDO is really. It really is in three parts. It covers three things. One is it keeps you safe in your job. You can't be fired because you identify as LGBTQ in Olathe anymore. Two, you can't be denied housing based on that. Mm-hmm. And three, yes, there is a component where if you are a business, you can't throw people out of your business. But it is only for companies that have 10 or more employees. So there's your local baker is right, fine. Right. And two, nothing that has anything to do with a religious organization. So no, you know, Catholic bookstore, Christian bookstore, any of those, that they're all exonerated. And I said, so it's really more about those first two pieces than the third.
Yeah.
And this guy just went, yeah. That's not like, you are an official of the city.
Yeah.
Come on, people. We gotta do better.
My
than
favorite
that.
Was when they were telling us that we all were going to band together and go to a shop that hated gay people. And and I was like, I'm not going to give you my money.
No, right.
Like
that's, to put them out of business. Right. Right. Yeah.
And my favorite question that someone asked, obviously in that forum, there isn't conversation back and forth, but someone in all of those weeks that I went there asked the public and said, what is it that you're so worried you're going to get in trouble for?
Right.
And no one could, no one had that answer. It's like, okay, if you think that this NDO stuff doesn't like really matter and that, it doesn't happen, then why aren't you passing it? Because what are you so scared of that you think you're going to do? And no one could answer that. And I was like, right, what you don't want to say is that we want to get rid of you because you're gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was like, it was the call to action in the room, and then it never got answered. Mm-hmm. None of the rebuttal people came up there and said, hey, I'd like to just touch really quick on that question. So that was interesting.
Yeah, but it happened. It passed.
It did.
Just a small victory in a very long battle
but
for equal rights.
As it grew, more and more people were there. And by the end, it was, there were a couple of weeks. Obviously Matt and I came in about, I'd say halfway through, if you will. By the end of it, though, tons of people. Standing room only.
Yeah.
If you weren't there at 6 o'clock, you weren't getting that day.
Those last few meetings, they were in the hall.
As
a matter of fact, some of our friends, one night, the night of the vote, they held it off so the vote didn't come until after 10 p.m. because they didn't want it to hit the news cycle.
Yeah.
That sucked. And when the vote finally came up at like 11:40, it was like, that's... They padded that meeting like you wouldn't believe, but by God... No one left. As a matter of fact, our friends were out in the lobby and they ordered pizza. They ate pizza in the lobby.
We'll be here all night because
we can
I
do
need
this.
To see that.
We can do this all night long.
So have you always, this fun tangent, have you always been someone who's like risen to the top of the groups and things that you are? Like you are such a voice in so many different ways, throughout your family, throughout your church, throughout the NDO, throughout Silpata, or even your current employment or whatever. You've always sort of been someone who rises to the top. And so is that a personality trait that you've sort of had your whole life? Or do you think that you've gained sort of that superpower later in life to really kind of recognize where your voice fits in the world?
Wow. Well, thank you.
I'm called the one that asked the deeper questions.
So through the emotional journey that I've taken, because I've healed a lot of stuff from my past, and it's through radical forgiveness, and I'm really blessed now to actually teach workshops on that thing. I'm doing one this weekend, actually, on Sunday. So that is such a big concept, but what it ultimately does when you really grasp it and you really do the work is you come out on the other end realizing that nothing is ever done to you. Everything is always done for you. So I know exactly when that I always say I'm a moderate in politics. I'm a political moderate, but I am an anarchist when it comes to human rights of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Female, child, sexual, religious, anything. I'm an anarchist. I will burn the fucking house down.
Yes, good.
If you try to take the rights away from someone, yeah, anyone else. So that came when I was in second grade in Frankfurt, Germany, Frankfurt Elementary, and you know, we didn't have TVs back then, but we did, but there was nothing on them. So you played outside, you know, all the time, and until the streetlights came on, and then you knew it was time to go inside. Well, in the mid-70s, the thing that you played was marbles. And I don't know if you ever played marbles in the dirt, but you draw a big circle and then you dig a couple of holes and then you put your hand down on the circle and you shoot your marble and you knock someone else's marble in the hole, you get to keep the marble.
Right.
I was really, really good at it. I played so much that I pushed my thumbnail cuticle back a couple times and lost my nail. I mean, I was good. I spent a lot.
You're
invested.
Committed.
Yes, yeah. I invested a lot. And my life was chaos in my home, you know, so finding things that would get me out and get me focused on other stuff was important. So that's the thing I fixated on, I guess. So in second grade, everyone played marbles in elementary school, and so they did a big marble championship. And they, I don't know what it's called, when it's like in basketball, but all the fifth graders played each other, the fourth, the third, the second, right, all the way down. And then
bracket.
That's it. I don't watch basketball. And then they took the best of the fifth and the fourth and the third, you know, and you start matching up against each other. And in the end, the top four people were three fifth grade boys and this little second grade girl.
You.
And yeah, that was me. And I was really cute. I had long pigtails. And so we played down to the final and I won.
Yeah, you did.
And
do you still have that Steely or whatever you won with?
I don't have that, but they gave me a pewter cup that says Frankfurt Elementary Marble Shooting Champion 71-72. And it sits in my bedroom.
You better.
So I can't remember what the distance was from when I won to when I was presented the cup. But they had this big school thing and they gave me the cup. And I was worried I was going to scratch it in my backpack. And I was good, I say friends, I was second grader. I was good friends with the vice principal.
Yeah.
That's funny, because that's my concept up until now. I'm 52 years old, and I think he was my friend. Anyway, he cared for me, and I think he sensed some of the trauma that was going on in life for me. And so I went to his office and asked if I could leave the cup there to keep it safe, and he said yes. Well, by the time I got out of class at the end of the day and went to get my cup, he had left early, and his office was locked, so I didn't have the cup. That all leads up to, I am walking home. Now I'm late, right, because I went to his office. Most of the kids are gone, and I used to cut behind the building to walk like the 2 miles home in the snow, uphill both ways.
Right.
It's
amazing those snow days.
It is, yeah. Especially in Germany. You don't know.
I don't
know.
I have no idea.
So I cut behind the building, back by the dumpsters, and who's there to greet me but those boys and a couple of others. So like five or six fifth grade boys. And they circle me and they start pushing me back and forth.
Like you're
shoving
a marble.
Me.
Huh? Like you're a marble.
Yeah.
They circle you like you're
a marble.
Yeah,
like a marble.
Right.
And they're shooting me back and forth.
Right.
And they rip my backpack off and they go digging in it to get, that's what they're looking for, is the cup. And they don't find it. Well, now what are they going to do? Right? That was their whole game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so they throw my backpack in the dumpster and they decide that's not enough and they pick me up and they throw me in the dumpster. Now, when you are in second grade, unless you're, you know, a basketball player's kid, you're really short. And I could not get out of the dumpster. And they were gone. And I cried. And it's stinky. And I'm trying to gather my stuff back up. And I'm in there crying. And I finally thought, okay, you have to figure this out or you're going to be here for a long time. Because it's going to still be a while before mom gets home and realizes you haven't gotten home.
Right.
Right.
And then they got to kind of try to find you, and we had no cell phones or any of those sorts of things. So I kind of dried my tears, and I looked around me, and I gathered all these boxes up and put them in the corner, and I made a ladder, a trash ladder. I threw my bag out, and then I climbed up on these boxes, and I hopped over. And I remember hitting the ground with my feet and kind of standing up and literally dusting myself off And I did put my hands on my hips, but I kind of envisioned myself doing that now. But I thought, as I'm picking my stuff up, I thought, okay, this is going to be my life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to get these opportunities. And I am never, ever, not only am I never going to throw anyone in a dumpster, I am never going to let anyone else be thrown in a dumpster. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it. And what fed into that, what was behind that as well, is second grade is when I fell in love with my first girl. Mm-hmm. And she was my teacher. Her name was Miss Alston. And she was this, she seemed very tall. And she wore really, really short hair, which in the 70s was, you know, very different because that was big afro time.
Radical, right.
So it was very short and tight. She was a black woman. And I just loved her so much. And I went home and said to my mom, what would you think if I ever wanted to marry a black person? Mm-hmm. And my mom keyed into black. Mm-hmm. And I was actually asking person. Like, I knew we were fine with a person of color.
Right.
Question was, are you okay with a woman of color? Mm-hmm. And my mom, you know, said the right thing, which was, you know, honey, I don't care who you love. I just want you to be loved by someone who will take care of you and mm-hmm. is a good person. But
I love Marge. Shout out to Marge.
Yeah, shout out to Marge P. So that was already in my consciousness of, I like this teacher. She's a girl. I'm going to like girls. Mm-hmm. And then the dumpster thing happened. And, you know, yeah, I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to get to be authentically who I am, and it's not going to be safe. Yeah. And it's going to be kind of scary at times. And people aren't going to like you for it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm ever going to meet anyone else like me, because at the time, I didn't know that there was anyone else like
me. There is no one like you,
Kim. Oh, sweet. You're 20.
Thanks, Kim.
So, yeah, that's really where it started. And I haven't been able to keep my mouth shut since. Yeah. So, I mean, when we came back from Germany, I lived in D.C. and had the great honor to be able to, like, skip school. Because I did well in school. My mom would be okay with me just not going in. And I'd take the subway in and sit and watch the Supreme Court and sit and watch the Senate work. And I became such an advocate, and I love to educate myself about the process, and I love America, and I love what we stand for. And I mean, I don't know if it was growing up in a foreign country and not coming back to the United States until high school, because I had no memories until I came home, but to come home to a foreign country, to me, what was a foreign country, and then be plopped in Washington, D.C., I mean, to this day, when you and I flew back from Paris, when I go through customs and they stamp my thing and they say welcome home, I go, thanks.
Thank you.
I mean, like, I get choked up.
Yeah.
Every time I put my hand over my heart and we sing the national anthem at my son's gymnastics thing, I'm like, oh,
God. Courtney and I will drive by the downtown courthouse on the day that citizens, you know, all come out. And we'll just sit there and, like, scream for them.
Over
and I know, we're like, good job. Yay.
Because did you watch Salvi get his this week?
I did watch Salvi get his.
He got sworn in as a U.S. citizen during the like, Royals Fan Fest or
whatever.
Oh, it was so sweet. It's so sweet. I just love everyone.
People who want to be an American should be.
Yep.
Agreed. Agreed.
Courtney and I were actually, I think, having the conversation earlier this week just about how I'm an only child. I've been raised to always have a voice at a table. And even though I may not have always known what I was talking about, there was always like this open
That never stopped you?
Right. It still doesn't stop me.
I've had you around my table.
I know.
Drinking a little much.
Kate's tables are, they're good tables. But, you
they
know,
are.
Because we actually talked about that on the vacation with my parents. Like, I've only sat at your table with the same people like twice ever.
Right.
You always bring a cacophony of different groups around there and say, here we are.
Yes.
Exist. This is how we all know each other today. By the time that you leave, everyone sort of has their own new relationships. But I've always been able to talk and figure out what's going on through my own ways. And so I kind of feel, I mean, I've never really had a boss. I'm my own boss. And I've always done that. I am an only child. I kind of hate authority, to be honest. I question it all. And so I'm so grateful that my parents sort of gave me that ability to make mistakes and that not be the end of my career or that I'm stupid or something. They're like, well, keep learning about how to be a more educated, better person that you want to be. And I feel like I attract other people like that in my life. You know, I, we've known each other, Kate. We could have told each other goodbye thousands of times through different projects, yeah. You know, in different ways. But nope, I'm still like, what the hell are you doing,
yeah.
Kate? And I love that sort of magnetic connection whenever you find them, because you do challenge me. You know, you put things into my head sometimes that I thought I knew what the hell I was talking about. And now, you know, and religion and things like that are a definite thing that you bring back into my life between you and your mom, because the way that you describe it is mm-hmm. not how all of the mean people have described it.
Right. Well, it doesn't hurt that you have sat at the table with Reverend Mike.
I have.
My dear friend Mike Irwin, who is the head of CSL, he and his husband Mark, and you've been there to have dinner with them. And when you look at this man and you think, wow, this guy, he's a reverend, for mm-hmm. God's sakes.
Aren't you
and
one
he's
too?
Very irreverent for a reverend. I am one, yes. If they'll
aren't
give me.
Aren't I one?
If they'll give us
I know.
A card, anybody can do it.
Anyone! But are you through Universal Life Church or whatever? Is that
whichever one was $49.99? Yes, I know. Yes,
so I can get it. My clergy thing I can hang on my card.
On your card.
Yeah.
Now I've been able to marry four couples now. Is so much fun.
Your most recent one was Dan, right?
Yes,
yeah.
In Atlanta.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it just, you know, my wife and I, we were together now 28 years, 28 and a half years. And we had a ceremony at year 15, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was the dresses and the, you know, everything, the plated dinner and all of that, but it wasn't legal. Mm-hmm. And then I fought so hard, so hard. Jack and I went and marched on Topeka, and we were interviewed by NPR, and, you know, fighting for rights, for marriage rights. And then when it passed, I was one of the first 20 in Johnson County to get the license, and I remember taking my picture with it, like, hey!
I got it!
Hey! And then they shut it down. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are you mother trucker?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I sat and waited and waited, and finally, however many weeks it was later, it was like giving childbirth. I don't remember the pain. I just remember that when it finally passed, Julie and I were like, okay, let's do it. And we went to CSL. It was like December 21st or something. And we got married again. Mm-hmm. And this time legally. And I remember when that happened, and there's our son, who at the time was mm-hmm. 9, you're getting to stand between us. And I thought, I want to be a part of this for other people. And my thought originally was that I would marry a bunch of gay and lesbian couples.
Right.
But the truth is, I'm 50-50 right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 50% have been straight couples. So I don't charge for it because I just love being a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, I just want to stand with you and declare love.
I'm an ambassador of love.
Yeah.
Like, that is a dream of mine to be able to do that. I just think it's so cool. So you have a son.
That's, I do.
That's correct. Love Jack. He
loves you.
He's a pretty cool
dude. He loves
dude.
You and your husband.
Yeah. I love Jack, you know. But I also feel like I've watched Jack grow up, too. I mean, if I've known you for 9, 10 years, I've known Jack for 9 or 10 years. How long, like, what Julie is the adoptive mother of Jack as well. How long from childbirth until that? Was it, like, immediate? Like, Jack was born and then Julie became Jack's mom, too? Or
no, because he was born in Florida and it was illegal.
Wow.
And then we came here. So Jack's original birth certificate just had mother, had no father name. Mm-hmm. And we moved here, and we, you know, it's very expensive at the point that you can't legally adopt a child because, one, we saddled him with the worst of names because he has both of our last names, Gimbalo hyphen Brundy. So it's like 18 letters out of the alphabet in it. And, but we had to do that because at the point that she ever traveled with him to come to where I was, if I was doing an event, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think she'd be allowed at that in those days would have been allowed on board a plane with this kid who had a different last name. So, so when we got here, so we had to pay thousands of dollars to have all the paperwork in place, you know, the parent ad litem or whatever, all that stuff, so that if anything happened to me, there would be no question that Jack would stay with her. Mm-hmm. But even then, she could have had a potential fight, legal fight, if anyone in my family were to fight her for it. Same with all of our shared possessions. There was a time when, you know, we've always owned our homes together, our cars together, we owned our boat together, but up until just less than a decade ago, even with my will saying it would all go to her, my family could have fought her.
Yeah.
So when we got here, we heard through the grapevine when Jack was about five or six that there was one judge in, I can't remember which county it was, who would do second parent adoptions. And so we hired a lawyer and we went, and this judge made Julie his adoptive parent. So it's when he was about six, I think, she became legally his mom.
That's so crazy that it took that long, you know, where from day one, she already was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's the first person to hold him after the doctor. She's the first person to pick him up.
Yep.
So he, we gave him the chance to change his name, and he wouldn't change his name, which I thought was really sweet. He wanted to keep both of them. But what was really cool was being able to say F you to the state of Florida, because I could then take that paperwork. I sent it back to Florida, and they had to reissue his birth certificate with two moms.
Yes.
So he now has a birth certificate that has both moms on it.
That's awesome. The adoption laws in this, well, I don't know about in Kansas as much as I do in Missouri, because when I was still working in law firms, that's what I did, and so I have more information about Missouri, but the adoption laws in these states here in the middle of the country where people used to get sent are the strangest adoption laws anywhere. They're very, very weird.
Would you say that it's probably easier to give a kid up for adoption more than it is to adopt a kid?
No. In place is what I like to say, personally, as a birth mother. Uh-huh. Place for adoption, not give up. It is because of the fact that there were basically no birth mother rights. They have obscenely strange ones now because of how much it was fought. And it differs from county to county. So in Jackson County, when we began our adoption process, we had so much more time to go in and say, just kidding, than most states have. So when Riley was born, we had to check her out of the hospital. We took her to foster care because she had to be in foster care for 15 days between I went to court and then they could not go to court for 15 days later. So like I gave birth on a Tuesday. I went to court on a Friday because I had to have a certain amount of time without any medicine in my system before I could actually go to court. And then they couldn't go to court until the following Friday, I think, or something of that nature, because they had to allow for me to say, just kidding. That's not what I thought. Mm-hmm. And in Cass County, I think, they had, when they adopted Jonathan, they had to be, my daughter's older brother, they had to stay in the state for 30 days. And they don't live in the state. They live in Kansas. So they just had to drive around the state of Missouri for 30 days because they couldn't. They're very, very weird because this is typically where the Midwest is where everyone from the coasts were sent for that mysterious 9-month vacation they went on in, you know, the 40s, 50s. They just had no, like, most of the time you would come here, you would go to some sort of, you know, lighthouse situation, something that was church-based, and you would never see the child.
Right.
And so you didn't have, they would just have you sign the paperwork, and that's why, like, I couldn't sign any paperwork until 48 hours after delivery in case I had anything medication-wise and all of that, but they just, you would never, you know, there would be no, and then now we have all of the, Missouri has passed the open records so that you have to be able to obtain your original birth certificates and all of that kind of stuff, that's very interesting for the Midwest. So if you're adopted and you had previously closed records, now I have a completely open adoption and always have. Riley actually just left last night. but for people who had completely closed adoptions, that information has now been made. You can obtain it at any point as long as it's from this state. So if your adoption took place in this state, then they have to open those records now to the child versus the parent.
I had no idea. Yeah. It was that hard.
It's so fascinating.
It is. It's nutty. It's a very, very interesting, because it is different from county to county, depending on where you are. And I believe that's the same in Kansas as well, but I don't have, when I was working in law firms, they were literally on state line. And so I don't have as much information about the Kansas side, even though that's where my adoption agency was. So, because I still work with birth mothers, doing mentoring stuff as they go through the court process. And just the emotional side of it is, you know, it's hard to have a conversation with somebody, no matter how trained they are, that hasn't been there.
Right. So it's...
And you and Alex are specifically special because you two are Riley's birth parents.
Correct.
And you're still together.
Right.
And
so we do different panels and things like that for both adoptive parents and birth parents to kind of have that, because it's very rare for the birth father to be involved.
Yeah.
Even though, again, in this state, you can't actually do... they couldn't have done a birth certificate sans with adoption, sans the birth father, because he could always come back.
Right.
And then also because we are in amidst a lot of different Indian tribes, they in the Midwest have a right to come in and say, you don't get to place that child for adoption. So like the tribe can come in and remove the adoption process, which is interesting.
Wow.
There's you know.
So many things that people don't know about. And that's
why I'm
like, wait a second.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so we had to do a lot of things when it was like we signed papers with Rhonda and John Riley's parents and saying that they wouldn't change her social security number and things like that. That was on, they offered that saying, you know, this way, at least that social security number will always be the same so that if something ever happens, you can track her down that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously all of her original stuff has my name on it, has my last name on it. Versus the stuff that once their adoption was finalized, it all has their last name on it. So, it's an interesting.
And did both of you go into it wanting the open adoption? Or is that something that grew?
Yeah, it definitely grew to what it is now. We both knew we wanted an open adoption. That was kind of the agency we went through definitely said, you know, this is the more healthy way to go about this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're allowed that opportunity, obviously there are situations where that is not the healthy way to go about
right.
this, but if you are both in a position that you can have that. And so we knew we kind of wanted letters and pictures and that sort of thing, maybe visits once every, you know, a little bit. We obviously Alex and I live here, and when Riley was born, her family lived in Lansing, so they were close, you know, they were just 30 minutes away. And so it kind of started out that way and then just sort of grew into this thing where, you know, Rhonda and I have a really interesting, special relationship. She calls me for advice. I call her for parenting advice now because I have never had kids that are the age that my kids are now, and have been able to really kind of make her life something that I'm sure is totally and completely abnormal, but at the same time feels totally normal to her because she's never known any different.
Sure.
Well, we're all friends with Riley.
Right.
It's so
yeah.
cool.
How old is she now?
She's 18.
She just turned 18.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, she'll text me for things. You know,
yeah.
It's so fun to have that sort of rapport with someone I have heard so much about.
Sure.
Right.
And then now I mean, definitely consider Riley one of my friends.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she is such a cool kid.
Where Matt and
yeah.
I are talking literally last night about the fact that, like, we never get to have an oops. You know, if we ever want to have a kid, we
mm-hmm.
have to
right.
mm-hmm.
methodically almost plan it out. Unless one of our friends, we make the joke, or one of our friends will have an accident, and that will be how we have our kid. But, you know, just talking about how that affects marriages and lives, and really whenever you're talking about kids sometimes... Like, Matt and I will never most likely have a conversation about, oops, we got pregnant, should we keep this kid, isn't it an open adoption?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a whole subset of conversation that we will never have, because if we plan to have kids, we're probably going to want to keep the kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As it,
you have that much effort into it.
As we
yeah.
move down that line, you know, and how, like, some of my friends right now are going through their separation of their lives and talking about that, you know, what it would have been like had they had to have thought more about having kids instead of just having kids.
Sure. Yeah.
mm-hmm.
You know, and be like, what would have happened if this one kid would have came 18 months later? How different maybe their lives could have been
mm-hmm.
in those 18 months? And I told her, I was like, you can't look back on
right.
those things because that's just not how life hands it to you. But she's pretty adamant about, like, oh my God, like, you and Matt get to choose a different kind of relationship in some way every day because you don't have this variable that was just given to you biologically.
Mm-hmm.
If Matt and I decide to have a kid next month, we've hopefully discussed
yep.
every step of that way.
Right.
Anyway, it's fun. I love learning about people, you know, and things like that.
Yeah.
Or how I'm going to change my verbiage now from not give up adoption, but place. See? She can be taught.
Just be open.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally open. Yeah. So the second half of our interview now is the kind of actor's question, you know, actor studio question. So now we get to ask you kind of some silly and weird questions.
Mm-hmm. Watch out for him. He's not going to be silly. I'm going to be silly. He's going to be deep.
Do you want to start with silly? Go ahead.
All right. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
Wow, that's awesome. What color am I in?
That's her color, everyone. Wow, that's awesome.
I am magenta-orange.
A magenta-orange.
Magenta-orange.
That's right.
I love that.
Yes, because I am the vibrancy of magenta and that warm orb, glowing orb piece of orange melded together.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to figure out how to spell that to call this episode.
Magenta-orange.
But that is so true. I love when people answer that question because you are both of those things. You are.
So obscure. We should have done this high. That would have been
high. You're not high? No.
Oh, shit. I knew I missed something.
Just kidding. Magenta. I'm not high.
Okay.
Right now. What is your definition of real magic?
Love.
See? Love.
It.
I agree.
It is what brings everything. I mean, and I believe that God is love, so, and I think that that's what magic is.
Do you love yourself?
Oh, I love me some Kate Gimbalo. Mm-hmm. She's one of my favorite people to hang out with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me too.
I do. I love her a lot.
Yeah.
Once I was able to deal with some crap that she was carrying around, and then to forgive her for some of the crap that she was carrying around.
Is that step one, is forgiving yourself?
Probably. No, for me, it was step 1,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, I forgave everybody else in my life, and then finally figured out that I had myself to forgive as well. So, yeah. No,
that's
pretty
in depth.
I love Kate.
Yeah, I love myself too, you know. He crazy.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, no. I'm not saying I'm normal.
Yeah. Especially because we're talking about loving ourselves right now. But
that's one of the things I love about me.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I know who I am. I'm authentic. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. When people answer, you know, love or that kind of human connection in that way, I'm always like, yeah, that's
pretty much every answer we've, I mean, like, I in some way, which is the coolest part about it, is that I think that everybody acknowledges that that's the real magic in life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right, let's see here.
She's got a list.
I know, I do. I have to remember them. Okay, what problem or situation did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life than it actually is?
Having sex.
Okay. Will you elaborate on that?
Well, I didn't see girls having sex. So, that wasn't out there, you see. So I had a lot of crap built up in my head because all I'd ever seen were these, you know, romantic rom-coms and tragic love stories, but it was always men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had all sorts of crazy shit going on in my head. Like, wow. I wonder how that's going to play out.
Right.
That is a great answer. Mm-hmm.
I'd never read anything about it. I'd never seen it. I'd never had anyone tell me about it. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any schools out there talking about sex education, you should probably figure out how to incorporate same-sex sex education.
Needless to say, my 12-year-old knows everything. The only thing that there were three things I had not talked to him about because I thought they're more sensual than sexual.
Sure.
But now that he's in middle school, we've had a couple of, and he watched The Office, and he watched 2 seasons of The Office before he turned me onto it.
I love
it. And by the end, I love it. And by the end of the 4th episode, I was like, okay.
We have to talk.
Jack, come sit down for a second.
We got some.
Remember when they said that word clitoris?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I said, you know what that is? No. All right.
Here we go.
Stop.
Here's a rose.
Well, and I did end that conversation with, and here's what's important. If you end up identifying as straight and you have relationships with women, this is going to be a really, really important thing for you to discover. Mm-hmm. I said, so it's really important. And he's like, okay. Like, just
cool,
remember.
Mom.
Just remember. I know. I sometimes say, have I, like, damaged you with the conversation about blowjobs? And he's like, yeah. Pretty much.
Yes, yeah. You have.
I'm like, well, if your friends are going to tell you jokes about it, I'm going to explain what
and
it
I'd
is.
And I'd rather you be informed.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's so much easier to discuss those things with kids than, like, when they come down to, like, the, like, totally, you know, philosophical, like, how do you, I'm, because Isabel is 8. And has watched all of those, so she's got, you know, even more information where I'm like, well, yes, let's explain what how you tuck and mm-hmm. what that means and mm-hmm. what this is and all of the things. But then she'll come to me, or Violet came to me this weekend and said, why can't the world just accept me naked? And I was like, oh, like you want to be a nudist? And she was like, I want to be naked all the time. And I was like, well, this is harder to explain than the AIDS crisis or how to tuck. I don't right. know how to tuck.
Because people are uncomfortable with naked bodies.
Yes.
And that is weird. Yeah, I definitely think that the more transparent we are about some of those mm-hmm. taboo subjects, mm-hmm. yep. the world, at least sitting around your table, as I will call the Kate Gimblett mm-hmm. table, will be better and stronger
yep.
if we kind of, you know, get rid of those things that we're not supposed to talk about because those are touchy subjects. I'm like, yeah. What? If someone hadn't talked to me about sex before I saw Rocky Horror Picture Show, I would have had a lot of questions about what was happening in there. Thank God.
Yeah.
What is something you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or are in the process of accomplishing?
The first thing I ever wanted to be as a child was a pilot. And I was told I could never be a pilot because I had bad eyes. I had bad eyes because I had meningitis and almost died before first grade or in first grade. And so it, you know, a lot of times people will be deaf or blind from it. So mine is just, I'm not blind, thank God. But because I had bad eyesight, they told me you can never be a pilot. Pilots have to have perfect eyesight.
Wow.
So when the year before I got pregnant with Jack, my wife, who has an innate fear of flying, does not enjoy it at all, doesn't like that I get on planes and fly to Dubai, you know. Mm-hmm. She's like, how do you stay in the air 17 hours? And don't you get worried? Turbulence, she is not her friend. And she, for my birthday, the year before I got pregnant, she bought me pilot lessons, mm-hmm. which I thought was, I mean, that's big to
that's big.
Buy something that you really don't want your wife to do.
Right? But knowing so, what you
knowing
love.
That it was my heart's yeah. desire. So yeah, I learned how to, I only got a couple lessons in and then I got pregnant. I thought, well, I'm not doing it when I'm pregnant. Yeah.
Right.
So, but I flew a plane. I legit
that
was able
so
to fly
cool.
a plane.
That
and I was so like, awesome. There you go. F you.
Mm-hmm. That is so people. Cool mm-hmm. that you did that. What is the furthest you've flown? Not like yourself, but like in a plane. Is it like Dubai? Like, do you know what you're furthest away from your home is that you travel?
Geographically, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, what's literally on the opposite side of the world, I don't know. I can tell you the worst flight I ever had. I flew out of Japan, and I had to take 2 flights to Taiwan. And so that was 12 hours going west to then take a flight to L.A.,
ooh.
Which was 18 hours east. So I had to double back, went over the international date line on my birthday. So mm-hmm. I like to say I gained 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I landed in L.A. I had a 5-hour layover. Then I flew from there to Miami and then went home to Fort Lauderdale. I was so sick. It was like
yeah.
49 hours from first takeoff to last landing. So sick that the next day I went to see my doctor and she admitted me into the hospital. They thought I had SARS.
Wow.
I was that sick. And I spent 3 days in the hospital. Oh. So I had one of those Scarlett O'Hara, I will never do that again! And I never have.
That like, sounds insane.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the story, though, is I got on the flight in Japan, and it was a big, big plane. There were like 20 of us, and they sat me, all these empty seats around me, they sat me next to this 110-year-old Japanese man. And at the time, I was a very large woman. I was somewhere over 350 pounds. I don't know where, because my scale stopped working. But I was large, and it was uncomfortable. And here's this poor guy. So once I hear the door shut, I move over, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
seat. And the woman comes, she said, you will take your seat. And I'm like, well, I can't stay here. She said, no. I'm like, okay. So I go and I sit down next to this little old man again. And then they get on, like they always do, you know, on the mm-hmm. loudspeaker, and it's all this stuff, all this information, you know, it's 5 minutes, right, of
right.
stuff. And then it clicks off, and it clicks back on, and it says, fasten your seatbelt. That's it.
You were like, that's all
I got.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, but as soon as we took off and I knew they couldn't throw me off the plane, I moved over to another seat. Right. But yeah, it was horrific. That was so. That's the most arduous.
Mm-hmm. Mine was just that my television screen didn't work fine back to Paris, so I had everyone else around me had stuff on, and I was like, oh my god, like I'm literally washing the screen next to me and without being able to hear,
right.
I'm going, I hope that worked. I slept a lot flying home from Paris, because I was so...
Oh yeah, that stinks.
Yeah. I wanted to like complain, but I didn't even know what I would complain about. You know, I was like, I'm flying home from Paris, like, who cares?
Yeah,
I want to go back to Europe so bad. Mm-hmm. It's gross. Mm-hmm. I want to go there so bad. Leave America for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
Madam. Oh, let's see here. All right. If you were invisible for 24 hours, what would you do with your time?
And you can teleport, so time is...
You
don't have to worry about the travel part of the 24 hours.
Don't waste time traveling.
Wow, I'm invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the variable.
I think I would go to L.A. and I would sneak into the homes of some of the people I really admire, mm-hmm. just to kind of see them in their natural habitat. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ellens and the Oprahs mm-hmm. of the world.
I would love to see what
and Oprah the Jodie Fosters.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you know a Jodie Foster, just not the Jodie Foster.
I know she's equally awesome, but
I love Jodie Foster. She was just in Disney World, I think, and I was like, I missed you by 2 days or something
for her sister's wedding. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so fun. If you could eat something for the rest of your life and never gain weight, what would it be? What would be your gluttonous thing that you could eat every day for the rest of your life?
Well, you know, I'm not a sweets person, so I'm going to disappoint you if you're thinking cake or something.
No.
But I would say lots of carbs, but like good carbs, like Coco Van over mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. You know, like the really dead. My mom's chicken and dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. those, yeah, those mm-hmm. things.
Chicken and dumplings. Oh, I love a good chicken and dumplings.
My God, her chicken and dumplings. They're actually my Louisiana born and bred grandmother's chicken mm-hmm. and dumplings.
Does she still make those?
My mom makes them, yes. Right. It's a big dang deal.
I'll get to her apartment, maybe.
We'll just message Marge and be like, hey, we're going to do
Have you ever met Marge Courtney?
We're Facebook friends.
Yeah. Of course you are.
Facebook friends.
She is an enigma, you know. Mm-hmm. The first time Matt met her, he was like, I just want to talk to her for the rest of my life. That's just it. I just want to sit at that end of the table and talk to her for the rest of my life.
And she would.
Yes.
Happily.
I know. Yeah. I love her Facebook updates these days. Mm-hmm. I had made myself a nice, you know, gimlet or something. Yeah. And I'm like, you work it out.
That's what she got for Christmas, basically. We bought her a nice bottle of whiskey, nice bottle of Cavassier. She's like, okay, great. And a book of pictures of Jack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all she needed. That's literally what she loves.
Every grandmother's dream.
Oh, and he sewed her a pillow.
Really?
It was the perfect Christmas mm-hmm. for her.
This past Christmas kind of happened so quickly when you kind of think about it. I don't, you know, the weeks, like, disappeared. Because Christmas was just a month ago, people, right?
Yeah, it's the month ago today? No.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Oof, that's just not, that. This has been a whole year crammed into that month.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Not to be political, but what do you think it's like to be living under an impeachment hearing right now taking place in our life every day? You know, I talk mm-hmm. about how that sort of is change, you know, that is something that we don't put enough credit into, like, that what we as a nation are living under mm-hmm. every day, you know, and it dictates, like, morality and all of those stuff. So what is it like for you in your current status as a woman, you know, of your age and sexuality to be living in today's life? You know, what's that like for you?
Maddening,
mm-hmm.
disappointing. I'd say scary, but I have no fear about anything. And I get to remember that the pendulum always swings and it overcompensates always. And so it goes too far one way and then it goes too far the other and it comes back to center. And I think, you know, if everything that happens for us, for all of us, it's literally serving every single human being affected by it, then the question for me continues to come up of what is that? How is it serving me for my better good? because I believe everything is serving you for your better good, and that you just need to learn the lesson. And I think as a nation and as a world, that's what's happening. I think this is part of a bigger wake-up call. I think the Gretas of the world, I think, you know, the activists of the world, the people who will not be shut up, are bringing up an entirely new era of activism and doing what's right, unlike anything we've seen since Martin Luther King. I mean, I think that we're seeing leaders emerge now that history will look back upon with such credibility, and we will have seen the effect of them. So that's what heartens me. And that would not have been possible had it not been for the people who are showing up in such a negative way. Mm-hmm. So that's the flip side of it. It's just extraordinarily painful to see the amount of damage that is having to be done to human beings for this world to learn those lessons. That's mm-hmm. what is at my heartbreak, is the, you know, from the kids at the border to the trans people who are being beaten and killed, to, you know, the women whose right to choose is being ripped from them. I mean, there are real lives in all of this. So it's a lot easier to sit back and talk about it esoterically and like, oh, we're all moving towards a better. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that there are boots on the ground of people who are being injured, damaged, and killed through this. And that is heartbreaking to me.
Yeah.
But I do believe that it has to get this uncomfortable for people to make a change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It always has.
And it's making people uncomfortable all the way up the age and demographic spectrum, yeah. too. I believe there was a time when some section of the demographic could sit back and be like, oh, that, you know, it's not really my world, or it doesn't really affect me. And I think today it affects everyone. Yeah. It's just, it's something, you know, that I talk about a lot in my, like, small circle of, you know, friends, of just what the world is actually like to exist in mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm. Because you've got kids, you know, you too. I mean, people came after Jack, yeah. you know, after the NDO stuff, and I'm mm-hmm. like, you're going after kids.
Right,
like,
right.
We're in a place where people feel, because they're so
emboldened.
Yeah, and they can hide behind a persona on social media almost, that the things that you say about kids right. is just
yeah.
mind-blowing to me right now. Because yeah. I still feel like a kid, and there are kids who are... Isabella has had more attention negative on her than I think I've had publicly yeah. ever. And yeah. she's 8, and you know, and the question comes is, you know, did you ask for that? Did you put... Right. Isabel out there, did you putting Jack up on the stand, you know, did you do something to put that target on his back? And my answer is always like, no, like, let the kids have a voice.
Right.
Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing, right. is letting the next generation, you know?
I know, but what I think is unique right now is that there are so many of us as parents who have made the conscious choice upon having children that those children are full-fledged humans, that we don't own them until they turn 18, and then somehow we gift them over to the world. And I think that level of, that type of parenting, that approach, is new. And it has come about now, one, because of the way in which we were raised, feeling we had no voice. I mean, be quiet, or, you know, be seen, not heard, and, you know, shut up, or, you know, stop crying, or
I'm
do
the
something
mommy
to cry
bear,
about.
That's why. Mm-hmm.
Yep,
it's
yep, yep. So I think that what's remarkable is that this level of parenting, this level of acknowledgement that these are human beings from the start, is what was necessary right now, because they are changing. I mean,
right.
I don't know about you, but when I'm around not just my son, who I feel is quite enlightened, one, because of our faith and the exposure he's had, but two, because of being so open with him, but it's not just him. I mean, it's... Mm-hmm. Everybody,
right.
It's pretty rare for me to see a kid that's sort of locked down into something
right.
other. These kids just don't get it.
Yeah.
And,
right.
you know, they're just having to outweigh us. Like, yep. we just need to die off.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There are a whole
yep.
bunch of us old fuddy-duddies that have a false belief system.
Yeah.
And we just need to go on to the next adventure so
yep.
that we can get the hell out of their way.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing that has been disheartening for me So I see all of that, and I love actually where we're headed as a mm-hmm. as a world. But in addition to the pain that people are physically and emotionally having to go through because of this brewing gunk that is happening, I am very saddened at the way it has broken people apart mm-hmm. within families, within friendships. And I do think that there's a real partisanship, and I'm not even talking about political partisanship, but there's a partisanship that has come into our lives, all of us, that's very disheartening and very yeah. saddening to me.
Yeah.
Especially because I do love and accept people and exalt people, but mm-hmm. you know, it's unfortunate that's, and I see it all around me. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but
oh, yeah.
in my own family and beyond. And, yeah.
Oh,
so
yes.
there will
I have
be
an
a...
aunt. I don't know if I. It's very difficult to exist in sometimes in the same globe
yeah,
as
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
In some ways, you know, and I fight often. Like, I can forgive her, or I can, you know, and do all of those things. But my forgiveness of her does not mean that she has to acknowledge me or
no,
right?
You know, but I don't want to carry that ill feeling toward her all the time, but it's a strange conversation to have with, like, my grandmother, who's her mom, you know, and mm-hmm. she's just like, oh, well, you know, your aunt is crazy, but I love her because she's my daughter. And I was like, right, I don't know if I can love her the same way you conditionally have to love mm-hmm. her. It's
yeah.
it's hard, you know, and yeah. and so much of me says I should stay in front of her face, you know, in different ways so she knows that I exist. And the other is like, well, do you deserve my energy?
That's just it. I mean, we have a finite amount of time,
right.
energy, and resources in this right. world. And I don't care if you live to be 80 or you live to be 8. When you pass, it will be too soon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It will be tragically too soon.
The one thing that can't escape is death, unfortunately. Yeah.
And so that's what it comes down to for me. You know, I will go fight for someone's rights. I will expend time and energy. I will have conversations, tough conversations with people. But if I'm putting my energy towards an immovable object, Mama got no time for that.
Yeah.
I got other people to help and to deal yeah. with. So sadly, it is the price that is being paid for this growth as
right.
a society mm-hmm. forward. But it will resolve itself.
It will.
And all of the bad, I mean, I know that we will look back at this period of time and think, wow, we were alive then.
Mm-hmm. Like,
we weren't just alive, we were in the mud
yep.
with it all.
We were the warriors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, yeah, I talk about a lot that I can't wait to see what art and shows and theater and expressions will come out of this section mm-hmm. of our existence, because we're just now still seeing, I mean, we just saw a play this past week about mm-hmm. Hitler,
Hitler,
you know, and
right.
the White Rose, and just those conversations that we are still having about
right.
something that took place in World War II.
Imagine right.
what
right.
art and theater and conversations, you know, the play about Greta, you know,
right.
that will come out,
right.
you know,
well, you
later
guys just
in
did
life.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Right.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how many decades ago was that
right.
inspired?
A
yep.
couple?
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There will be a wave of
yeah.
expressions.
And we sort of all have to collide to, not collide, but like sit, because people also, like, you have the aggressive art that comes out now, you know, that doesn't really have like a ton of thought into it. You're just
mm-hmm.
like,
it's yeah.
angry. It's the first step. And then really when the thought process comes out, the 9/11 plays that I saw 5 years after 9/11
mm-hmm.
happened, when
sure.
people started dissecting it and, excuse me, and like telling the stories of the people inside of the World Trade Center,
yep.
instead of talking
mm-hmm.
about the tragedy that happened,
right.
but starting to give the voice to
mm-hmm.
the people that we didn't lose. Those are just art and plays that I'm as an artist, I'm so excited
yeah.
for the healing through art
mm-hmm.
that we're going to get in the next 5 to 10
mm-hmm.
years or whatever.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool.
Agreed.
Well, our time is almost up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. This was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah, that was a great idea.
I love getting to do this, because at some point we are just sitting around a table
right.
shooting the shit.
Yeah, in
yeah.
a little room.
In
That's
a little
right.
room.
Closet room.
So
I love it.
Our two, my last two questions are, is there anything that you did not get to say, any words of advice, any things you would love to tell our listeners about yourself that we did not get to touch on?
There's always a way out of the dumpster.
There's always a way out. Bitch, gonna make me cry right here.
All right, so So now I don't have to spell magentorange.
Well, you do. You do. But not because there's always a way out of the dumpster. Oof. That's going to resonate. That's good. And last question is, who should we have on the couch? Who would you like to hear from in your world, tangibly, that I could get into the room?
Tangibly that you could get in the room. Wow, there are so many that go through my head. I tell you, if you could get her to do it, I have a friend named Nikki McDonald.
I love her.
Who is one of the smartest human beings I've ever known, and an activist, and a mom of two boys, and she's making a difference in the world, and she's doing it behind the scenes.
She's the reason we pretty much had the live streams of the Indio. She's the one who set up the camera.
And she gets no attention or focus, or not least not good stuff. She gets negative stuff. But she is insatiable when it comes to doing what's right. And she's making a difference. And she's getting the right people on the right ballots. And she's getting them voted for. Yeah. So she's making a difference in our in our community. So.
Nikki, I'm coming for you, man. I would love to reach out to her, especially because she is an extension of what our normal sort of like pod is. Mm-hmm. So I would love, I love having those conversations with those next circle people.
Yeah, down. I love that.
Yeah.
What do we got coming up next week?
We don't know who our guests are.
We don't know who our guests is for next week. That far. The weather, and then like,
hopefully,
you know,
maybe we'll do a live broadcast from the
Super
parade.
Bowl? Oh, the
Super Bowl parade.
That will, like, a week from now, we will know if we won the Super Bowl.
It's true. Yeah.
Are you guys...
A week from now, there's going to be a shit ton of people with hangovers.
Yeah, that's true.
Regardless.
Yes. Yeah. So no matter what.
At this time, in 1 week, there are going to be a lot of
people waking up.
Taking Advil.
Yes. Uh-huh. That was one of my favorite parts about living in Colombia. You know, because when MU would play, we would either all be out partying because they won, or we'd all be out partying because they lost. So that'll be great. Well... Kate Gimbalo, it was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending an hour with us.
It was fun. Yes. Thanks.
Yeah. And then tune in next week where we will highlight the Super Bowl and talk to some other amazing soul. We'll see who's here next week, everyone. Happy 2020.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.